On the record, Ms. Roberts.
Yeah, thank you very much. Mr. Gimbel, I had a chance to organize my thoughts during our break, so hopefully this will go more smoothly. You're familiar with the language in SB 208 that we've been discussing today about costs and benefits, correct?
I've read the bill.
Okay. Benefits isn't really defined anywhere in that statute, is it?
It just says the company will. No, it isn't defined.
Okay. Does the legislature in that bill use the terms avoided cost or PERPA or qualifying facility in the section in which it discusses costs and benefits?
It doesn't.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to ask you some questions about the distribution benefits, avoided distribution benefits, which has been a topic of considerable discussion. What is your understanding of the company's evidence with regard to the peak load reduction benefits of rooftop solar? What is the company's evidence? It's another way of asking that.
I'm sorry, restate that, please. Sorry.
What is the company's evidence that rooftop solar does not reduce distribution peaks?
The company has alluded to a rooftop solar study that it did for North, trying to remember the name of it, it's Northeast Something 16, which was done by or performed back in August, I think it was August 2nd, 2010, to indicate at least on that feeder system, around that circuit, that it peaked at 7 p.m.
Okay. Is there any other evidence that the company's presented that comes to mind at the moment?
Yeah, I think Mr. Marks is, in terms of his testimony and responding to cross-examination today, indicated that, the peak is, the distribution peak, can be at 4 o'clock, but it can be sustained till after 7 o'clock, and that by that time, net metering production falls off dramatically by the time you get, 6:30, 7 o'clock, 7:30.
Okay. If the peak occurs at 4 p.m., is there a benefit in terms of peak load reduction by solar?
Solar should have a higher coincidence.
Okay. So the earlier the distribution peak, the higher the benefit provided by the distributed solar resource?
Yes, but this can change every year.
Why would it change every year?
Because feeder systems can peak at different times, just because of different conditions.
But the general principle that the earlier the distribution peak, the more solar benefit to that peak, that principle would carry on year after year,
I mean, correct? If it peaked at 1 or 2 p.m., obviously solar would, when solar is at its peak, it would have more of a coincidence with the distribution peak.
Okay, I'd like to approach the witness and share an exhibit that was already introduced as Sierra Club Cross Exhibit Number 1, if I may.
You may.
Mr. Gimbel, this exhibit is a data request submitted by your office to the company, correct?
Correct.
And are you familiar with this data request?
Yes, I'm generally familiar with it.
Okay. Now, I did ask Mr. Marks a few questions about this exhibit earlier regarding when the distribution system peaks are occurring on the various feeders. Do you recall Mr. Marks's responses to those questions?
I generally.
Okay.
recall them.
Okay. Based on your knowledge of this data, and feel free to flip through the sheets a bit more, would you say there's a large variation in when these distribution substations experience their peaks?
It looks like most of them peak between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m.
And so the stations that are peaking at 4 p.m. Might have a greater than 7%, might experience a greater than 7% reduction due to solar. Would you agree with that statement?
I would agree with that.
Okay. Okay. I have no further questions regarding that exhibit. You stated earlier that the office's recommendation was that the net metering facilities charge not apply to existing customers, correct?
That was my testimony in my direct, yes. The office cautioned in terms of it was our preference.
Your preference.
We thought there could be some legal issues in terms of basically grandfathering the existing customers, and that if the commission desired to consider that as an option, that in terms of grandfathering, that it should request party attorneys to brief the issue.
Okay. Why do you think, so on the one side, there are legal concerns about grandfathering. Why, on the other hand, is it the office's preference that the fee not apply retroactively? What are the policy reasons underlying that preference?
It was in consideration of gradualism.
Could you explain that a bit more?
Yes. In terms of rate-making principles, one of the rate-making principles that analysts tend to look at in terms of cost causation, fairness, rate stability, gradualism in terms of this is a new policy. In terms of gradualism, if the commission wanted to consider that, if it could legally consider it, because we indicated that it should be briefed, that was one thing they could consider if they wanted to bring gradualism into the picture.
Thank you. Would you agree that there have been many different ways of framing costs and benefits that have been raised in this docket and in the testimony today?
I think the testimony today, the company's testimony, if that's what you're talking about.
I'm talking about all the parties' different representations and concepts of what costs and benefits might mean. There's some diversity there, no?
There is diversity.
Okay. And do you think that based on this existing record, the commission has sufficient guidance about how to compare the costs and benefits, considering the many diverse framings of those concepts that the parties have brought?
I would need to understand what you mean by guidance.
Okay. Are you familiar with the recent study that was completed by E3 for the Nevada Utility Commission?
It was attached to your witness's testimony, and I didn't read it carefully, but I did look at it over the weekend.
Okay. And did you see the part of that executive summary where they discussed the different types of cost and benefit tests that were evaluated in the study?
I did, and I noticed that it didn't pass all the tests. It passed some tests. It didn't pass other tests. And the primary reason that I understand why it passed, for example, the RIM test and the PAC test was there was a multiplier of 2.4 having to do with the RECs. And in terms of those RECs, the RECs go to the utilities so they could use it to meet their RPS requirements. That was my understanding in reading them.
Thank you. I wasn't asking you about the results of the study. They are very varied depending on which time frame you're looking at and which cost effectiveness test. What I wanted to ask you is, do you feel that there's value in comparing costs and benefits under the ratepayer impact measure test, under a utility cost test, under those different frameworks? Is that helpful? That's the kind of guidance I'm wondering whether you agree that the commission would benefit from having, is those different cost benefit tests.
I think there could be benefit there, but conversely, you know, I think the commission has made it quite clear in their order in 12035100 that in terms of at least solar QFs, that it wasn't going to consider adding compensation, if you will, to those facilities for environmental risk, for fuel price volatility, et cetera.
Okay. The commission wasn't thinking about evaluating the costs and benefits of net metering when it ruled in the particular docket that you're referring to, was it?
It was looking at solar QFs. So from the standpoint of the value of solar, it did, you know, render a decision, but it was solar QFs.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions.
Ms. Hayes.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Afternoon, whatever it is.
All right. I'd first like to direct you to page 7 of your surrebuttal testimony. At line 189.
I'm there.
Thanks. You state that functionalizing costs by production, transmission, distribution, et cetera, is typically the first step in the process of allocating costs to rate schedules, and you recommend for analytical purposes separating net metering costs and benefits by functional category. Is that correct?
It's correct.
Is it the office's position that benefits exceeding costs in one functional category could be used to offset costs in another category? I can give you a for example if you
want to give the example.
Okay, so sure. For example, if energy generation benefits were found to outweigh costs, could that excess value be used to offset distribution and transmission costs, for example?
You know, I think that would have to be up to the commission in terms of how it establishes kind of its parameters in looking at costs and benefits and what categories of costs and benefits that it's going to include if it goes forward in a separate proceeding or a separate process to consider costs and benefits.
Okay.
That it would be up to their, you know, discretion.
Okay. But so you've proposed sort of analytically functionalizing these costs, but you're not making a position on whether costs and benefits can outweigh each other?
I think the commission would have to take evidence on that in terms of what costs and benefit categories it was going to look at in terms of, you know, if it did open up a separate process to examine those,
okay,
those types of issues.
Then let's move on to same testimony lines 314 to 319. That's at page, it's the last line of 314 and on to page, or last line of page 11 on to page 12. You say that, oh, I'll wait for you.
Give me the line number again if you would.
Oh, 314.
I'm there.
You say that if the commission's decision to implement a net metering fee is delayed beyond the current case, is it the office's position that it will be appropriate to levy a net metering fee regardless of what evidence or analysis may show in a comprehensive net metering evaluation?
The office's position is that it has sufficient evidence to implement a net metering facilities charge, a residential net metering facilities charge in this docket.
Right, but you say you're talking about if the commission doesn't do that and it delay, you say delays implementation.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering if the commission ordered a new proceeding to look at the costs and benefits, if the office would be willing to evaluate the evidence and analysis in an impartial manner, because it sounds like you've concluded that a net metering fee will be implemented regardless of what any evidence is presented in a separate proceeding.
No, I addressed that. I think in my summary that whatever the commission does in terms, if it opens up a separate process, we'll participate fully and comply with whatever process and whatever guidance that the commission gives in terms of the information that it wants to review in such a process.
Okay, thank you. I am assuming you heard some of my cross-examination or all of it of Mr. Duvall. Are you familiar with Utah Docket 090-3527?
It doesn't ring a bell.
Sure. So, as I said before, it was in the matter of the proposed revisions to the Utah Demand Side Resource Program performance standards, and the commission issued an order in response to a report submitted by a report of guidelines and recommendations on demand side management programs submitted by the Demand Side Management Advisory Group. Are you in the Demand Side Management Advisory Group?
I think at the time, it was 2009, is that what you just said?
Mm-hmm.
I think I was involved somewhat in that process.
All right. I have...
It's coming back a bit.
Okay. I have your name on a list
okay.
of participants. I would like to distribute another cross-exhibit.
Thank you.
Thank you. Does this look familiar to you?
Yes, I haven't seen it in a while. But
in a while, right?
It's familiar.
All right.
For the record, Ms. Hayes, I think this is UCE Cross Exhibit 2. Is that right?
Yes.
So I'm going to mark it that
Thank you.
Way.
And I'm not sure I offered Cross Exhibit 1 for admission, but perhaps I will offer both of those when I conclude questioning Mr. Gimbel. So would you read for the record what this document is?
In the left corner, it says, in the matter of the proposed revisions to the Utah Demand-Side Resource Program Performance Standards.
And then in the right corner?
090-3527.
And it's the order that was issued on October 7th, 2009. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Would you turn with me to page 15 of this order and read this top paragraph?
We concur with the recommendation to evaluate small-scale renewable resources such as solar, photovoltaic projects.
It's a terrible word.
On a similar basis as energy efficiency and load management until other economic tests are available. Thus, all five tests will be performed. Should any of the tests fail, the company parties may present arguments, and we shall consider whether the program is in the public interest for reasons other than economic efficiency.
Thank you. And you are familiar, I'm assuming, because you were just discussing them with Ms. Roberts, the five cost effectiveness tests used in evaluating energy efficiency programs?
I'm familiar with them.
Would you turn with me to page 3 of the order? And read the first full sentence on at the top of page 3, starting with further.
The one that's highlighted?
Yeah.
Further, the company has developed more sophisticated methods for estimating utility cost savings from DSM programs rather than relying on avoided costs approved for schedule number 37 payments to small qualifying facilities.
So it appears, does it not, that the commission has considered the issue of using avoided costs to evaluate distributed solar resources and decided that the five cost effectiveness tests were an improvement over avoided costs when valuing demand side and distributed solar resources, doesn't it?
And what I just read, it says DSM programs.
And then on page 15. Page 15, the commission.
Yes, it says all five tests will be performed.
For small-scale renewable resources such as solar photovoltaic projects, correct?
That's how the order reads.
No further questions. Move to admit use Talk Clean Energy Cross Exhibits 1 and 2 into the record?
Objections? They're received.
Thank you.
Redirect.
Just one particular point. Mr. Gimbel, you were asked about the office's efforts to support programs or projects that can potentially result in cleaner air efforts. Do you recall that?
I recall that.
Does the office have free rein to support any project that is proposed?
No, we have to comply with our statutory authority.
May I approach?
Yes.
If you would just go ahead and read subsection 1.
Where it starts, there is created within the office.
Down here.
Oh, down here, powers. Okay.
54-10A-301.
Sorry. This is powers and duties of the office. And it says under the subheading 1, the office shall, A, assess the impact of utility rate changes and other regulatory actions related to an applicable public utility on sub 1, residential consumers, and sub 2, small commercial consumers. Back to B, assist a residential consumer or a small commercial consumer in appearing before the commission. And C, through its director, advocate on the office's own behalf in its own name a position most advantageous to 1, residential customers, 2, small commercial customers. You want me to continue?
Just through subsection 1.
Okay. Sure.
Questions for Mr. Gimbel? Commissioner LaVar.
I'd like to clarify a little bit your recommendations to the commission regarding messaging. In your summary, at the end of your server bottle, you've suggested that whatever policy direction we engage in, we should take an active role in messaging. And then on page 12 of your survey, specifically, you seem to be saying, and tell me if I've got it wrong, that if we do not approve the fee in this docket, we should inform both current net metering customers and the general public. That's the part I'd like to ask you about. If I'm reading this right, you're saying if we don't impose the fee in this docket, we need to inform the general public. What should that message to the general public be in that situation?
I think my testimony reads in the context.
Turn on the mic. My testimony is in the context that if you open up a separate proceeding and take additional evidence, then I think the public needs to know kind of what your timeline is in terms of considering additional evidence. What process are you going to use? And, you know, kind of what your objectives are.
So that's geared toward inviting participation in that docket? Is that what you're getting at?
Just to communicate, because there's been such a public interest in the net metering issue, what the commission's intentions are going forward.
Okay, that's all I have. Thanks.
Mr. Gimbel, there was a moment while you were up here, and I was reminded of something I couldn't find in the testimony, and maybe you can help me out here. And I don't know that in the context of the public contacting us and asserting that this could be a deal killer for solar, do we have any elasticity of demand information? Do we know whether or not a $4 and or sub $5 fee is going to cause a concomitant decline in applications for new solar? Did I just miss it, or do we not have that kind of information in this case?
I can't recall a party that's filed any elasticity of demand information.
And are you,
if that's your question,
are you aware of any studies or anything that's come out of the other states that are looking at this issue? I know you have a background in economics, so I'm just curious what you've come across.
My review of what's going on in other states is limited. I don't know if they've requested that kind of information be provided in terms of their analysis of costs and benefits,
okay,
associated with net metering.
Do you happen to have an opinion of what a nearly $5 charge would do to a decision to build a $10,000, $15,000, or $20,000 solar system?
Do I have an opinion on how that would impact
the demand? Based on your extensive experience here with the office.
I don't have an opinion on how that would impact an individual customer at a, you know, I guess the average customer would be about 3.2 kW, so under our proposal it would be approximately $5. But there are a lot of customers that are less than that as well. But the average customer is about 3.2.
So what I'm really hearing is there may not be a lot of information on that subject. It's too new, maybe? The concept, the issues that we're dealing with.
Yeah, the office hasn't viewed it from the standpoint of the decision making by an individual net metering customer or potential net metering customer whether they would whether that would impact their decision or not.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions?
Would the commission indulge me to ask one follow-up question based on what occurred to me based on the questioning of Chairman Allen?
Is there an objection? Okay, Mr. Moskin, go forward.
Could I approach the witness? I'm bringing this up because I assume you do not have with you the testimony of company witness Joel Stewart.
I may, but go ahead and bring it up.
Did you review any of the testimony of the company and prepare your materials?
I did.
I'm handing you an excerpt from the testimony of Joel Stewart, and I've underlined a portion, and for purposes of everyone else that wants to follow along, maybe you should know the page.
Sure. It's page 7 of the rebuttal testimony of Joel R. Stewart, lines 143 through 146. Yes. As noted in my direct testimony, the number of customers installing facilities and participating in net metering has grown by over 30% annually. Sorry. As noted in my direct testimony, the number of customers installing facilities and participating in net metering has grown by over 30% annually. In just the 5 months since my direct testimony was prepared, the total number of net metering customers has grown by nearly an additional 20%.
Would you agree with me that if At the time, the company published its intention to impose a facility charge on net meter customers with the filing of the company's rate case, that in the 5 months after that, with all of the publicity that's been noted in this case, the fact that rather than slowing, net meter customer applications continue to rise, wouldn't you agree with me that that is in fact the type of evidence that was just asked about as to whether or not this proposed fee is going to have a crisis-type impact on customers signing up for solar power?
It's, I think the chair, Chairman Allen asked me about elasticity studies. That isn't necessarily an elasticity study, but what it does demonstrate is that it doesn't seem to be stemming the tide to invest or lease in solar PV systems in Utah.
Thank you.
Redirect, Mr. Coleman.
I have nothing further. Thank you.
Okay. You're excused.
Thank you.
Or I can stall for a little while to go to 5:30.
What's your thought? Starting a witness? Or? Yeah. So we're wondering if we ought to proceed tonight and begin a new witness. Are there parties that are? We're mindful of Mr. Gilliam's plain commitment, and is there anything else that ought to factor into our determination of whether we just press on for a few minutes? Either way. Well, why don't we get started with you? Okay, you want to start? Okay. Okay. Are parties able to give us a sense of how much cross-examination there is for Mr. Gilliam?
The company does not have an extensive amount.
I anticipate little, if any, from the division.
I gotta bear with me for a second while I search through my papers. Not terribly extensive, some, but not extensive.
I'd be willing to, and I haven't, of course, discussed this with any other parties, but if tomorrow in the 30 minutes before the lunch hour or something, if we haven't already gotten to him to just take him out of turn at a time like that, I think something like that would be fine and dandy.
So do I.
Yeah. He agrees. Okay.
Not just fine.
All right. Then we'll be in recess until tomorrow at 9 a.m. Unless there's any preliminary matter or procedural matter that any party would like to address now. Thank you all. We'll see you tomorrow. We're off the record.
I have a couple questions for you guys. You want to go somewhere and chat?
Yeah, happy to. So, unfortunately, Utah, the union chief has scheduled a sort of here's what a public witness hearing is event this evening.
Like a training thing?
Yeah, mostly just like, yeah, this is the...